November 4, Sierra Juliet Charlie. Model standing by.
K3JCA monitoring.
K83JCA, W4DJW.
K83JCA.
How's it going? What's new?
Nothing much other than fighting with the VA to get doctor's appointments scheduled.
To get some paint on that portion of the house that the animals tore up?
Yeah, actually I'm letting one piece dry out because when he put the contractor put it up, he forgot to tighten the little connector on the water spout, so it dripped a little bit. It wasn't like a constant leak, it was like a drip every so many minutes, so it kind of got soaked in that area. So I'm letting it dry out here before I paint the wood.
Well, I guess that made an impact to your schedule of things you were hoping to get accomplished, huh? I hate it when that happens.
Well, he asked me where my pipe wrench was, and I told him, and I guess he didn't get it yet, so when he was cutting the holes and putting everything together, he did it finger tight and put the tape on and so forth like that, but I guess it just slipped his mind when he put it back together and put it up. And then when he came back to finish the project to seal off the hole, we put some like metal flashing around the hole where the pipes and stuff come out to keep the dogs from scratching at that and tearing it up.
So did the squirrel get away?
To say, I find him in my yard daily, where they've been beheaded there.
You find them, like, still alive, or you find pieces of them?
One that was kind of still alive, but the rest of them are just pieces where they play tug-of-war with them.
I had a cat one time that used to catch squirrels, and you'd see the squirrel from the waist up one day, and another day you'd see a squirrel from the waist down. She'd bring them to, or he, it was a he, a male cat. He'd bring them to the front door. He'd bring them to the back door. It's like, this is my present to you. But he'd eat half of the squirrel before he brought it up to the back door or the front door.
Having a heyday, I guess I got a family of rabbits out back in addition to squirrels. And so they love chasing the rabbits too. And I should have known this was going to happen because they actually did the same thing to the back of my storage shed out behind my house here between the shed and the fence that I couldn't see until one day I went out there. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Well, have you got a way to keep them out of that area so it doesn't happen again?
Pepper and pizza on the Texas pizza down that area, so they kind of stay away from that now. They want to walk. Instead of walking completely around the shed, they kind of go from left to right, from side to front to side to back to the front, so they kind of stay away from the back now.
Well, that's good. Amy used to get some stuff that was bitter something, bitter orange or bitter lemon, I can't remember what it was, but she used to spray it around the furniture for the animals that like to go up to the furniture to pee, and it worked for a while, but we ended up just blocking that whole area off, so they couldn't even go back there anymore.
We don't let them do that much in the house here, but I'm getting ready to, I hate keeping them crated up all the time. If I'm home, they're out of their crates and so forth, and we let them out periodically so that they don't go marking anything. But I remembered that my dad went out and bought them little doggy diaper things that he put on the two male dogs. So Abby, I don't have to worry about. She lets me know when she has to go to the bathroom. But Coco, he's the one that does like to mark if necessary. He's the more dominant male. KA3JCA.
W4DJW, we had to do that with one that got really, really old, and she couldn't control her bladder anymore. And she always, for the last maybe year of her life, she wore a diaper. And that's kind of sad, but, you know, when they're your pet, you do what you got to do, right? W4DJW.
I downloaded that zip file the other day, but I haven't done anything. Okay, thank you. Tell your mom I said hi.
Okay.
Yeah, that was Sally. She's going to her mom's. But I downloaded it. I just haven't put it in the folder yet to run it to make sure it works.
Well, I noticed I was following somebody else's net one night, and I keep an eye on it because it takes a while for it to jump. And I noticed that it was jumping. So I just took about 3 hours just to go through every line of code and I finally spotted some code that I added recently. What it used to not do, remember when you told me about not having the date and the time, I added the time stamp. At the same time, I added something, so that if you change the calendar control, that it would change the which day you start on, because it never used to do that either. You could change the calendar control all you wanted, and it would stay on the day of the week that you launched it on. Not, it wouldn't, like, make the Wednesday bold and red if the day that you clicked on the calendar was Wednesday. So I added some code to make it do that. And that was the code that was going back and changing it. Oh, but it only changed it when you moved your mouse across the calendar. It took me a long time to figure that out. Moving the mouse across the calendar was misinterpreted as changing the calendar. You weren't changing it. You just moved your mouse across it. So that's a bug in the MFC library, Microsoft Foundation class.
I was going to ask you, I'm opening it up right now. Do you have another question? Underneath the find call and under the comment box, there is a slider bar. What's that for?
If you want to go through, if you get a whole lot of, like we used to have over 100 people check in, sometimes up to 120 people would check in. And if you didn't want to use the vertical slide bar on the logbook to go up and down to look for them, and you wanted to know precisely where somebody was, what number they were in the log, that one, as you add more and more, you'll see it'll get more and more ticks, tick marks on it. So it's a one for one. The quantity of tick marks on that sidebar is equal to the quantity of people that you have in the current log that you're working on. And when you slide it back and forth, it populates the upper half with the information from the person that you slid it up to. So it's just like an indexer for where you are in the log and whose record is in that position.
Believe it or not, I actually just now saw the tick marks. I have a 15-inch laptop, and I'm talking about it first. I'm sitting here looking at it, and I couldn't see them, but I thought it was like kind of zoom in a little bit, but I see them now. KA3JCA.
W4DJW. Yeah, they change with each person that you add, and if you go up there and click on it and drag it, it'll refresh it if it's not in sync with the logbook. But that's just a quick way of, you can do it with the vertical slide bar too, but if you don't have the vertical slider, you know, the more traditional one that's over on the left hand or the right hand side of the screen, you can use that one too. But it doesn't, when you slide it up and down, it doesn't change whose name is up in the preview list up at the top, whereas that one does.
Well, now that I've got a few days filled in with temporary stuff that I've called, I'm actually able to pull up, like, the history dialog and stuff like that, so I can see the number of check-ins. Like, one call sign had 17 check-ins, and this is the unique ID number that was assigned to it, and so forth like that, so I know where to go back into the dates and look at the line numbers and so forth for the log.
Well, take your time. There's a lot. There's a lot to learn there, a lot to catch up on. And also, like I was saying, if you ever think of something that can be beneficial to everybody in the long run, one of the things I was going to do is make it so that for new people that are learning, you can have one person driving it and another person just reading from it, right? So if two people, because one of the reasons they have the net every night, the main reason is, you know, to keep the frequency in use and keep people aware of who else is around and, you know, all of that stuff. But another one is if you have to have a unscheduled net, usually you've got one net control operator, but you've got several people helping that net control operator. And they may be out in different areas, different locations, or they may be right there on site. You may have one person running the software and the net control operator is just talking, but the net control operator needs to reference the logbook, right, for the net every now and then. And the net control operator will delegate their responsibilities out to several different people. And one of the things that's been discussed before is making it so that one person can enter it and the other person can follow it. So that if you're calling a net, you don't even have to type or write or anything. You got two people doing it. One person is driving and the other person is talking. So it might add that kind of capability in the future.
Well, between Sally and Ashley, they've been helping, when I call it, on writing it down because they're trying to get, one, used to the call signs and the voice. So that's what we're working with them right now, is doing that. And I think I've got my keyboard, the wireless keyboard, worked in, so it's broken some now. I'll not do that again. But it's got fresh batteries in it, and it has been being used constantly, so it just makes it easier.
Okay, that would be a good another example. If you wanted to once you're comfortable with it, if you want to drive it and just let them talk, then that's a less stressful way to get them, you know, introduce it to them. So same with the new net control operator. And you don't have to be co-located. You could be on opposite sides of the earth and it still work and work through the internet. You just have to, you know, feed it some information that tells it where the central communication hub was, and that could be, you know, the same as we use for Echo Link and Prenet check-ins.
Yeah, I'm actually in the process of kind of retweaking the script for when I check in, because I kind of liked what you asked. You asked about any new hams out there wishing to be checking in, and then I was listening to another. I've been trying to check in like two or three different nets throughout the week, and there's another net. I want to say it's the one over on Sassafras Mountain or Pickin' Glassy Mountain or whatever, but they always ask, is there an alternate net control on frequency? I don't know if that's something that we want to add just to be on the safe side in case we have an issue where, you know, the repeater goes down or somebody can't hear or whatever.
Yeah, that's usually switching over to 8.2. That's the normal protocol. If something goes wrong with the primary, you switch to the backup, and the 8.2 is the backup.
Yeah, I told myself I hope I don't have that happen to me like it did to Chad that one night, man. I think everybody was pulling their hair out, but I was able to put both 8.2 and 6.10 in my radio, so I was able to listen to both frequencies, and then also I think Gary helped out that night for additional check-ins, so it worked out.
Yeah, you're in a good place for that. I don't think you have anything in between you and Paris Mountain or anything between you and Caesar's Head, so unlike me, I'm on the opposite side of Paris Mountain from where the antenna is located on Paris Mountain, and it's just a little bit below the peak. The peak is a little bit higher than the antenna from where I am. So it makes it difficult for me to hit that one.
I'm going to give it probably another month here or so. I told Sally that I'm going to buy another 100-foot section of coax, and then I'm going to try to get a couple people over to just help. And one person can do it, but I think if you had two people helping to lower that mast, you basically just unhook take a pair of, not pliers, but I use a crescent wrench, and you just put it on there, and you kind of turn the L-shaped bolt, and it loosens it up, and you drop the one pole down inside the other, and when it gets down to it, you lock it off, and then you put the next one and lower it down. What I want to do is, initially when I set it up, I took the very top pole, and it's only out about 4 feet. It's only about like half of the 10-foot pole, and I want to maybe add an extra 2 feet for each section on the top three sections, and that'll give me that extra 6 to 8 feet in height, but I just don't have enough coax right now. Plus, the coax that I have is, I've been here since 2015, and that coax I've had probably for the last 15 to 20 years that I've used it, so it's about time to replace it. KA3JCA.
Well, every bit higher you can get, the better. All the way up to, you get about 50 feet at least, and it even continues, but I think you get the most benefit from 0 to 50, you probably see a whole lot better performance than you see added from 50 to 100. You get more performance as you go up beyond 50 to 100, but I think you get a bigger jump from 0 to 50 than you do from 50 to 100.
Because I think when I first put it up, it was just like 10 feet above the roof line, and I finally got my friend Brian over to help me put it up higher, so... And that's what we did. So, but we only put it up as high as for the amount of coax that I had. So, but I get that coax and I'll be able to go up. The pole is technically 70 feet, fully extended and locked into its place. And then, of course, the vertical on top of that. So I may just have to add a couple additional guy wires just to be on the safe side.
That's a tall pole. I've never heard of one that being that tall before. I've heard of like 24 to 32 foot for a single pole, but I've never heard of one 70 feet. You'd need guide wires for that. Plus, you wouldn't want it to, you'd need something underneath of it to keep it from pushing itself into the ground.
It actually doesn't push itself too much in the ground. I do have cinder blocks. It's actually sitting inside cinder blocks to keep it from kicking out. And then, of course, I have it bolted to the eave of the house at the peak and so forth like that. And then, of course, the height that it goes up, I think it's closer to the top, but I basically have three guy wires on it right now. And it does pretty good. But when I was in Florida, they had an emergency service group that bought so many of these 70-foot galvanized steel poles for emergency communication. And I was actually fortunate enough to get two of them. Now, one of them got tore up like Swiss cheese during Hurricane Charlie, Jean, and Francis when it came through in 2005. But I still had the other one, and so that's what I have left. But it is a booger. It's difficult for two people to carry it.
I can imagine. But if it works, it works, right? It's like Ray used to say, if it works, it's an antenna. If it doesn't, it's a bird perch. Anyway, if you can get it working. I got three pieces of 10-foot steel pipe with joiners is what I use. And I just screwed the three pieces together with two joiners and put caps on each end and put one end on the ground and then threw a rope around the other end of it and had a buddy of mine sit on the roof and gave him the rope. And he just pulled it up to the roof and then used one of those flanges that has four bolt holes in it and bolted the flange to the side of the house and put a T-connector over, put it up through a hole in a T-connector and just bolted that up to the side of the house. And 90 degrees perpendicular to that, to the chimney. So you got one flange about 15 feet up bolted to the chimney, pointed in one direction, and the other one about 25 feet up, pointed 90 degrees perpendicular to the first one, bolted up against the house. And so far, that hasn't been any trouble. It's a 30-foot long piece of steel pipe. And then, like you said, then the antenna gets bolted to the top section of that, which is another 17 feet for a total of 30, 40, 57 feet, or 47 feet, something like that, to the top of the antenna. Almost 50, not quite.
We'll go up another 10 or 20 foot with that pipe. So... let's see here. Tonight's Wednesday, so tonight's Gary's night, right?
W4DJW. Yeah, it is his turn tonight. SwapNet night.
Okay. Yeah, I'll try to make sure I catch tonight. I'm trying to see. I missed it last week, and I did go to the SwapNet, and on the website, that SwapNet, that is current as far as we know, correct?
Yeah, Gary keeps that pretty well. I mean... You know, to the point that people tell Gary, you know, that they've sold something. If they don't tell him, he doesn't know, then he won't remove it. But they typically tell him when they're adding something, but I don't know how good they are about when they sell something. So if it's on there, chances are high that it's available, but there could be that rare possibility where somebody hasn't told them that they sold something yet.
Okay. Well, I think I'm going to go. I got some time here before Ashley's on her way home here. She got hired for a new job, so she's going to be working Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, full-time, with possible to overtime. So making a few dollars more than what she's currently making, which is nice. So she's finally putting her really good news.
Well, good for her. Very good. I know that's always a good feeling. Anyway, I'll let you go. And if you're around, I'll catch you on the net tonight. KA3JCA, W4DJW.
All right, Dave. KA3JCA.